Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, Mr. Pfeiffer.
Angela.
Everybody loves Angela DeMarco.
No!
No?
No!
What are you going to do about it?
Frank loves Angela, but he's married to his job.
And how am I supposed to get ahead in the family, huh?
Some way you always have. Lie, cheat, steal.
Mike loves Angela, but he's married to the law.
I say we tap her phone, her house, stake her out, tail.
Oh, Angela.
Tony loves Angela, but he's married to his wife.
If I ever catch you two together.
Let's try this uniform on, then we'll see how things look.
Everybody loves Angela, but she's married to the mob.
I want a divorce!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pfeiffer Fridays, where we walk you through the films of one Michelle Pfeiffer, and every F-word automatically has a silent P. I'm Jerry Downey.
And I'm Michael McLean.
And today we are covering 1988's Married to the Mob, starring Matthew Modine, Dean Stockwell, Mercedes Rule, Alec Baldwin, Oliver Platt, Joan Cusack, and of course, La Pfeiffer as Miss Angela DeMarco. And we have a very special guest with us today. One of my dear friends from Dallas recently moved to LA. We have stage actress and letterboxed maven, Laura Saladino is with us.
Hi, what a great description. I only want to be referred to as a letterboxed maven from now on.
Yeah, stage actress / letterboxed maven. I like That's the sound it. Of that.
It's going on my tombstone. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Of course, yes, we're happy you're with us.
Yay.
So, Laura, we'll start with you. Is this your first time watching Married to the Mob?
It was not. This was my second time. I watched this for the first time a few years ago. I think it was 3 years ago. I had been searching my whole life for a mob movie with a female protagonist. And this came to me, and it's just fulfilled every fantasy I've ever had about this kind of movie. I still do want one with a woman as the actual mob boss, but this comes so very close. So I love this movie. I think it's one of Jonathan Demme's best movies, and it's so much fun.
And Mr. McLean, this was your first time, correct?
Yes, this is my first time, so I'm the newbie to this one.
Woo!
Group. Yeah, I it's funny that you say that, Laura, because I love mob movies, you know, especially when Scarface came around at the beginning of our podcast journey with this. I loved it so much. I just have that soft spot for a mob movie. And yeah, this is like one of the very few that have a female protagonist.
Yes.
Where it really is her journey that we're following through this crazy mafia world. Mm-hmm. I didn't even really think about that part this is one of the only ones that has a leading lady.
And yeah.
She's not like the girlfriend from Scarface, you know, this is really her journey. Yeah, I loved it too. It's so much fun. And I think it's one of my favorite Jonathan Demme's. I love so many of his movies, but this will be in the little favorites category, I think.
Definitely. Top five for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we go ahead and jump in, Laura, as our guest, we always like to ask, what's your first Michelle Pfeiffer memory? And what's your favorite movie of hers? What was sort of the gateway?
I think probably like every kid in the 90s, I think technically my first Michelle movie was probably The Prince of Egypt. But that would have been before I had any concept of who she was as an actress. I don't think I really had concepts of actors at that age. It was just, you know, whoever this voice is behind this character. I don't know who these people are. But the first movie that I remember watching of hers that I knew, okay, this is, you know, a famous actress, is probably I Am Sam, which is a really strange one, but I remember watching this. I don't know who let me watch this as an 11-year-old, because it is not a movie for children, but I did. I watched it at a friend's house, and she's so great in that. So that's I think that would be like the first real Michelle Pfeiffer movie I ever saw. And that would have come before something like Hairspray or something where I really would have known who she was.
Yeah.
So that would be the first one. My favorite, I think performance and movie are two different things for me. My favorite Michelle performance, it has to be Selena Kyle in Batman Returns. I will go to my grave cursing the Oscars for not giving that to her. It's just ridiculous. It's such an unhinged performance. And every time I've seen that movie, and I've seen it quite a few times now, I love it more and more. But my favorite movie that she's been in is The Age of Innocence. It's my favorite Scorsese movie. I think it's so underrated. It's so lush and romantic, and it's, oh, you just like, ugh, you feel such yearning and passion when you're watching it. I love both of those so much, but I have lots of favorites, but those would be the first, the top two of Michelle's.
Those are excellent choices. Those are tops on our list too.
Thank you.
It's so funny that you said, I Am Sam, Laura, because I'm remembering seeing that at a very young age too.
What? Who let us watch these movies?
I can't remember if it was, I don't think I saw it in theaters.
Yeah.
I may have been just like either on TV or was a DVD that my parents rented from Blockbuster, and probably because Dakota Fanning was in it, so it was another child actor.
Maybe that's why I watched it too, because it was like, here's a child. You can watch this child. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they thought it was okay, you know, because a child's in it. You can relate to this. And
yeah,
I remember liking her for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, whatever, what Sean Penn is doing in the movie, and it'll be interesting to rewatch it because I haven't seen any trace of it since being a child. So I don't know what I'm going to think about this now.
That'll be interesting for you guys to revisit.
But I remember like watching Sean Penn in that movie and wondering, something's up with him. Not really understanding what the context of the movie is, but thinking, huh.
Yes.
Head scratcher. Like, what's going on with that man in that movie?
Yeah, we were a little too young to fully grasp the story going on. Yeah. Interesting.
Interesting that we both watched that movie at an inappropriate age.
Wait, Jerry, I don't know. What was your favorite, your first Michelle movie?
Grease 2.
It was Grease 2? Oh, that's perfect. How appropriate.
on TNT, they were playing the first and second one all the time, and I was obsessed with the first Grease and found out that there's a Grease 2, and probably watched Grease 2 at an age that was inappropriate for how horny Grease 2 is.
Both of them, yes.
But Grease 2 was my first.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. That's beautiful.
I really think now I'm going to have to say I Am Sam is one of the first ones I ever saw of her. I think we're going to have to.
Change your answer. There you go.
So, Married to the Mob. Laura, before we go ahead and like jump in, would you like to give a quick synopsis?
I would love to.
Of Married to the Mob.
Yes. Okay. I feel it's very appropriate that you had the person with the Italian last name on this episode.
That's
which I don't know if you chose that on
it
purpose.
It clicked with me about 5 minutes ago that I was just like, we could not have picked a better guest for Married to the Mob.
As I was watching this, I'll get into the synopsis after this, but you know, it opens up with Rosemary Clooney singing Mambo Italiano, which is a song I heard many times in my childhood. So I was like, I'm at home. Yes. I'm watching The Sopranos right now too. So I'm very, very entrenched in this world. Yeah. Okay. Married to the Mob. Married to the Mob is about Angela DeMarco. Although maybe we should be obligated to pronounce it Angela DeMarco. If we're going to, every time we say it, we should say it like that. Okay. Who is played by our beloved Michelle Pfeiffer. Angela is married to Frank DeMarco, who is a mobster. And Frank is unfortunately having an affair with his Don's mistress. Mm-hmm. The Don, with Tony Russo, catches them together in the worst hotel room you've ever seen in your lives and murders them. He probably murders them because they chose that specific hotel room and not because they were, you know, having an affair together, but whatever. Probably. So in the aftermath, of her husband's death, Angela decides that this life isn't for her anymore. She's done living the mafia life. She doesn't want any part of it. And so she and her son move into Manhattan. They move into this tiny little rundown apartment that has a bathtub in the kitchen, which is what everyone wants out of an apartment. We all need to chop potatoes and shave our legs at the same time. So I think this is a pro of this apartment. Mm-hmm. Angela gets a job at a hair salon and is just trying to live her life and move past everything. But of course, Tony Russo has this obsession with Angela, and his obsession has caught the eye of the FBI and of something much more sinister, Tony's wife, Connie. The FBI dispatches two of the goofiest agents to ever exist to surveil Angela. Connie starts stalking her as well. And throughout the movie, shenanigans ensue. We spend some time at a Caribbean-themed bar and a pre-9/11 airport gate. Eventually, everyone winds up in the honeymoon suite of a Miami beach resort where Tony is finally arrested and Connie loses her mind. And Angela is finally free to live the remainder of her life in peace and happiness, free to flirt with Matthew Modine for the rest of her days. And that is Married to the Mob.
Well played.
That was wonderful.
You're welcome.
Y'all, I love this movie. I do.
Oh, yeah. It's so much fun.
It's also shockingly underrated.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It's not one that you hear mentioned when people talk about Michelle Pfeiffer, which after seeing it, especially seeing it twice now, is shocking to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because she doesn't always get to be super funny. She's often, you know, a little tragic or seductive. And she gets to be a little more playful in this one.
I think this really ticks a lot of the boxes that she does well and allows them to really coalesce into a full-fledged performance rather than segmenting them out into sections. Like, she gets to be sexy and she gets to have that toughness she's known for, but also be super vulnerable at the same time. And it just,
right.
It's a really fantastic performance from her that's very different from anything else she's really done before or since. It just allows her to show off a lot of what she can do.
Yeah, you really get the sense that she's having fun in this role. And the whole scene when she and Matthew Modine go out on their date and go to the bar, they're just having the time of their lives in this scene. It's just so silly and fun. And then she gets to be a little mobster herself as we get to the ends. Jerry, you had sent me that article about this movie and talking about how much fun she had doing it and how respected she felt from Jonathan Demme. And that makes all the difference in her performance. You can really see how safe she felt in doing, getting to do whatever she wanted.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I felt with her performance in this, Angela as a character, I wrote this down that I couldn't think of another way to describe it, but she has no mask. I think her filter is kind of, once she escapes, once she asks Frank for a divorce and she leaves town, and once she gets to New York, she feels a little bit more rattled to me, and I think that makes her even funnier.
Yes.
Said the I don't know why I wrote this. I said the quote-unquote oh fuck filter is always on. She's always shaking, you know. She's always a little really flying by the seat of her pants once she gets out from under the mob's thumb, but then once they find her again, the funny, the nerves, the just the really great comedy amps up. And yeah, I love that I'm trying to think of I think it's when she's trying to nab Tony, once she realizes that this guy Mike Smith is actually Detective Downey, once the jig is up for her and she realizes she's gonna have to nab Tony, she gets more shaky. She gets a little more
right.
I think it's when she's giving him the ring to Tony, And he's like, your hands are shaking. He notices that about her. And even in the final showdown in the honeymoon suite, that she's got her hand on the, she's got the gun in her hand and she's just shaking like a leaf. I love when she gets to be this unhinged, just completely not put together. I love that when we get to just let her go in that direction, because it's so funny when she does it. And yeah, in Jonathan Demme's hands, it's so good.
Yeah, the choreography of the blocking and all of those scenes is so fun. She's just, even if she's not front and center, you see her in the background looking so nervous, like she's in the background of the airport, so desperately trying to board this plane. Creeping by in the background past Mercedes Rule. Yeah.
Yes. I also love how sweet she is, like how trusting she is. It's almost like when she gets to Manhattan and thinks that she's actually free of the mob, she's just nice to everybody. Yeah. Whereas when she was around her mob friends, she was always trying to get out of being around them. She really didn't like them, but you know, she's never seen Matthew Modine before. And she makes a special trip upstairs to take him cold medicine.
Yeah.
And it's, she's just has this really naturally trusting demeanor that I think amps up. The scene I love is actually after their tiki bar date, from her like kicking the club soda out of his hand to Mercedes Rule coming in like a hurricane. And then that sweet monologue she has on the couch where she's just like, oh, this can't happen for me. And it's one of the very few just really internalized moments she has in the movie that just lands like gangbusters in that moment for her, because it's so kind of like you said, Michael, it's unmasked, it's very naked and very vulnerable, and it lands because of everything that's built to that point.
Yeah, it's a risk, you know. Yeah. Especially with that monologue, I wrote down she sang like a canary, but it's still, like you were saying, Jerry, it's so unmasked, it's so, that moment of vulnerability comes through and it really lands. So even though I think in a typical mob movie this would be the moment that this is the character's downfall, but it's really this springboard for, you know, a whole other plot point. It's a whole other thing. And you feel for her. She just wants a fresh start. Like when she goes into the hair salon to ask Rita for a job, how vulnerable is that? How she makes you feel for her so deeply in that moment. So each of these risks that she takes to be vulnerable and open up her heart really land.
She's a very non-judgmental character. The scene that I love, it's just so sweet, is when she's on the streets looking for a job and she has no luck and isn't finding anything. And she comes across the guy who's playing the spoons on the street. And like, this poor woman is broke. She has nothing. And she gives him a few dollars. And it's just so sweet. And so then he's the one who tells her about the ill-fated job at the chicken place. I mean, who among us doesn't have a chicken with an eye cut out in our apartments?
Yeah, you can't see it now. Mine's on the other, on this other wall. You can't.
Oh, Michael. What a great scene.
Oh my gosh. And the fact that she just still ran out with the uniform on and like has it for three scenes. Afterwards.
What a look. Yes, that is an iconic look. I want one of those for myself. Yes. Marching bands, jackets.
Your Halloween costume, you know, the little chicken looking jacket, and then the alligator skirt.
Yes.
And the heels. You gotta have the heels.
Of course. Yeah. Big hair too. Oh, all of it combined.
The hair in this movie.
Oh.
So, okay, here's a question, because I was thinking about this as I was watching. Do you prefer her longer hair or her shorter hair in this movie? Because I think I like the longer better. I don't love the shorter as much.
See, and I think I'm a shorter guy.
Interesting. Okay.
I like the longer.
Yeah.
But it's not that the short hair doesn't work for her. It totally does, but
it's just different. It's a different look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, the long hair was the mob. You know, the short hair is the now, the New York look. You know, it's the New York.
Yes. Yes.
New York Angela, I guess.
It's symbolic of the change.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Going out on her own. Yeah, she doesn't have to fit in. She doesn't have to look like all the other women in the grocery store. She's choosing something different. Oh, those women.
Oh, my God.
They're perfect.
They're great. They're so good. I forgot that Joan Cusack was in this from the first time I saw it to now, until the opening credits. And I went, oh, my God, Joan.
So when I originally watched this movie, all I knew was that it was a Michelle Pfeiffer movie. That's
it. Oh, okay.
And so it's going through these opening credits and I'm just losing it like the gay man I am, because I see Mercedes Rule's name and I'm just like, hell yes, we love Mercedes Rule. And then two names later, it was just like Joan Cusack. It's like, why have I not seen this movie before?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Why did no one tell me about this?
Right.
How dare they? Yeah. Joan does not have a whole lot to do. She just really has a couple of scenes at the beginning. They have those incredible outfits at the funeral. Those hats are just Sadie outrageous.
Rule's hat just floors me.
Mm-hmm.
I also love that Mercedes Rule's hair gets larger the more unhinged she gets.
That's she is true. Like full LeBrain Bracco in Goodfellas by the end of it. When she comes into that honeymoon suite, it's Lorraine Bracco holding the gun over Ray Liotta. Yes.
The Miami Heat has just done a full number on her hair. She looks like she's wearing the Cowardly Lion's mane.
It's like Monica and Friends when they go to the Bahamas. Yes.
That grocery store scene, is there a more perfect scene in cinema when... after the funeral, she's in the grocery store and each of Mercedes Rule and her little cronies just bash her cart and corner her in the cereal aisle or something.
Yeah.
And just Mercedes Rule just takes open up that carton of eggs and cracks it in half. I've never seen anything like that before in my life.
There should only be threats with a carton of eggs from now on. If you're ever threatening someone, you're required to hold eggs in your hands and just smash them.
Oh my God. What did she say? You know, you should have a flea collar. And I just, she'll say, if you're interested in that, they're on aisle 5 or something.
Yes.
Oh my, they invented reading. They invented the reading challenge, I think.
Angela, watch your ass.
It's so good. And they come down those aisles as if they planned it. Like, first I'm going to come down the aisle. And then 2 minutes later, you bring your cart down the aisle. Mm-hmm. And then 2 minutes later, I'll bring my cart. And then we'll just like, we'll lock her in.
I noticed that the way he films Mercedes, especially, is that, speaking of Jonathan Demme, is that she inserts herself into the frame. You know, it's never a pan over to Mercedes Rule. It's like an insert into... Much like her character just inserts herself into everything.
Yeah.
I think at the funeral, when they're just checking in on Angela and making sure she's okay, you're seeing Angela's point of view with these women. And it's, you know, Joan Cusack, it's the other blonde lady. And then it's just Mercedes worming her way in there.
Swooping in. Yeah.
Yeah. You see, you know, I think we see it more in like Silence of the Lambs and probably Philadelphia later on with more of his dramatic stuff. But with his point of view shots, you even in a comedy like this, you still see him creeping in.
And I noticed that there weren't as many of those straight on shots like he does a lot in his other films. Weren't as many in this, but there was, there are a couple with Tony or Frank, or maybe both, I think. Mm-hmm. I wish there were more of Michelle. I would like to have seen him do more shots like that with her. It's so good. It's so striking and vulnerable to have someone look dead in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a good storyteller.
Yeah.
Like even, like you said, Michael, even for something like this that is not a drama, he still manages to tell exactly what he wants you to be experiencing at that time. Because the one time where he does let the camera linger on her is that monologue on her couch. Mm-hmm. And he makes just enough cuts to Matthew Modine to let you know what he's thinking as she's sort of word vomiting all over him. But really, it's 3 minutes of just letting her go. And I think that's why I love it so much, because like you said, Laura, you don't get a whole lot of it, but that is one moment where it is just us watching her do her right. things.
Yes. And that the outfit, I'm going to talk about the costumes a lot, because I think although Michelle is the star of this movie, the second star is really Colleen Atwood's costume design, because mm-hmm. oh my God, I've never seen anything like this. And that outfit she's wearing in the grocery store is that it's all denim. It's oh, like yes. a denim jacket and denim shoes and denim pants. And she's got her hair up. It's fantastic.
It's a crime we only see that costume panned down like once.
Yeah.
You get a full
yeah.
Yep. I loved the, I think it's, is it when she arrives? Maybe it's the just the outfit she wears all during the honeymoon suite, the final honeymoon suite with the I forget, print. Is it like a leopard skin? I forget what print it
yeah.
is. There's like a little bit of chain in the back or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's very Miami. It's very, the vibes I get from the whole Miami sequence, it feels like it takes place in the same world as Barb and Star. I kept I'm thinking sure. those two movies would go together yes. so well. Yeah. I want them to come across each other in this honeymoon suite.
Yeah, it's all those aquas and they open that honeymoon suite door and that's exactly, it takes you to a whole different just cheap it's horrible. So tacky.
It's so tacky, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's so funny that Jonathan wanted to lean into the tackiness of this story. I guess in the article that Jerry shared with us, Demi mentions how he wanted this to be a send-up of these mob movies and to be really kitschy, you know. Yeah. These I think we really associate, I mean, especially like with, I guess, The Godfather or Scarface even, with that kind of grandeur, that the really over the top designs and really how more is more in this case. I wonder if you're even noticing this on The Sopranos, Laura, when you're watching, mm-hmm. they do lean into, you know, really excessive design choices.
Yes.
And it's really fun to see them send up those attitudes in the mob. You know, they go to like basically medieval times for like a dinner.
Oh my meal. God. It's so. All so kitschy. Yes. Mm-hmm. Cause you're right. And I think that article in the LA Times said that you so often see these mob movies where everyone's so stylish and they're all in Armani or something. And these are not necessarily very wealthy people. Like the house that they live in at the beginning, her and Alec Baldwin's character, it's not a big fancy house. It's just kind of a normal little house. And the design in that is atrocious too. It's I don't know what's going on in there. And it's just so funny to think this is not something to aspire to. The mob is not stylish and classy. This is a different world that I don't want any part of.
Yeah, he does turn it on its head, because like Michelle says, everything we own fell off a truck. But yeah. You know, in most movies, like Michael was saying, the stuff that falls off the truck is magically very rich, expensive things. Right. And in Long Island, that's not the case, apparently.
I guess not.
It even sends up a bit of a detective kind of or crime, because with Matthew Modine, his first entrance, one of his first entrances is in his room.
Oh my God.
To describe what that room is, you kind of have to see this to believe this. With his shirts positioned and his pants positioned and the cat food feeder.
His Wallace and Gromit, the wrong trousers set up.
Yes, yeah, just I guess, yeah.
Swoop into it. That's exactly what I thought of. I was like, oh, I've seen this before in Claymation. I love him. He's the goofiest. He is so great.
Yeah, I guess he's worthy of Claymation practically.
Oh, absolutely. He should be.
The stupid shit that he and Oliver Platt do together. They're just the funniest duo to watch, because they're so incompetent, but they're also somewhat good at their jobs. They're going to be really silly while doing it. And it's great.
They'll get to their goal eventually. But they're going to take a real windy road to get there. every time they did their little hand slap thing, little high five, I don't even know. It was like a slow-mo. I can't even recreate it. It's just so, so stupid. But that's what makes it great.
He's adorable. Like, you totally buy his shtick and why Angela would automatically trust him by just bumping into him on an elevator.
Mm-hmm. He's so wholesome. He's just good-hearted, which is another thing. That's another kind of turning it on its head that you don't see a lot from an FBI agent. I can't think of another, unless it's like a pure comedy, another example of an FBI agent who was just so sweet and silly and dumb. Mm-hmm. And that's just something a little bit different than we have seen before.
And then picking an actor that attractive and making him be the dumb, goofy FBI agent is also a bit of a plot twist, because wouldn't a character like this that is that attractive, wouldn't he just be a whiz at his job? Wouldn't he just be annoyingly amazing? But no, we have to get a real looker like Matthew Modine and make him be silly. He can be ridiculous.
Yes, let the pretty people be dumb.
Yeah.
And then let Michelle save him at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
With that fabulous right hook.
The reels back. Right hook.
It is very slow, but she got it.
Were you going to say something, Jerry? I think I cut you off.
I don't think so.
Okay. My lust for Matthew Modine got in the way.
Oh, relatable.
It did pop in my head when you said hot. Apparently, they really wanted Tom Cruise.
Oh my God, I read that. Yes.
Which,
I don't know.
What a different character that would be.
Yes, very much so. I mean, he would be just as hot as Matthew Modine, especially in 88, but I'm kind of, I like the word you used, Lauren, just wholesome. And 88 Tom Cruise is not wholesome.
No, he's, 80s Tom Cruise was sexy and cool, but you would not like him immediately like you do with Matthew Modine. And that's what you have to feel with this character. You have to immediately go, oh, this guy. If it was Tom Cruise, you would just be suspicious of him and his motives. It would be very different.
I wonder if he wanted to have gotten as silly at that point in his career, if he would have wanted to appear as silly as Matthew Modine is.
Right.
I don't see that's him leaning into a lot of that physical comedy. I think he would have wanted to, knowing men and knowing their reputations, I don't think he would have wanted to come off of, I guess, this would be post Risky Business, Top Gun, post all that. Right. I don't know if he would have, really gelled with, having to do some of this.
It would be a very different role for him. I'm trying to think if we've ever seen a goofy Tom Cruise before. Is there anything? I'm trying to think.
I mean, even things that are on more of the goofier scale, he's not the goofy Parks. I'm thinking like he was in Rock of Ages, which no one should watch. And that's a sillier, campier movie, but he is not part of that. He's playing it. He's the rocker. He gets to be, again, sexy and cool and all that.
Well, okay. There is, hold on. I mean, guys, how could we forget Tropic Thunder? I mean,
which got him a Golden Globe nomination.
Right? It did indeed. I think that's the goofiest Tom Cruise we've ever seen.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay, but that was much later in his career. He was like, all right, I've been hot, I've been the action hero, and now I'll do this.
Yeah, he opted out of this one to do Cocktail.
Oh, great. Everyone's favorite movie.
I mean, I watched that copious amounts of times on TBS, but not because it's a good movie.
My dad just talks about Cocktail constantly because he was a bartender when that movie came out. And so everybody wanted him to do the moves from Cocktail.
Of course.
And so they apparently broke so many bottles.
Cocktail will give you very high expectations for what your bartenders can do for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I've frequently heard Cocktail brought up in conversation with my father. We talk about the old days.
All right. So, okay. So speaking of people who almost played this, apparently the first choice for Angela was Jessica Lange, which is also a very different Angela.
See, because kind of like we talked about Tom Cruise, I can't think of really a comedy outside of Tootsie, which even then I don't consider Jessica Lange to be particularly funny.
Right.
In Tootsie, I can't think of a real comedy with her.
I don't know if I can either. She is on the spectrum of all the things that Michelle Pfeiffer's Angela is in this movie. Jessica Lange swings far to the like seductive, sultry side. She's I don't know if mature is the right word, if she's like the more mature choice, but it would lose some of its spunk that Michelle Pfeiffer has. I don't know if that is how I would describe Jessica Lange.
Yeah, I feel like for some reason, the things that make Michelle vulnerable would somehow make Jessica Lange very tragic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that she can't be funny, because we have seen her do kind of campy stuff, like in every Ryan Murphy vehicle that's ever existed.
Of course.
She has been in and has turned up the camp, but that's just different. This is, I don't think Married to the Mob is camp. It's just comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You have people that are very fine-tuned to the style, because for some reason you have this really great principal quartet who can make something that is probably not going to be funny when played by any other person funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just something I love about Mercedes Rule in particular. She is able to toss off a line of dialogue that is probably not funny on the page, and it's the most hysterical thing in the movie. It's a gift.
She is, I've never seen someone more committed to a role than Mercedes Rule. Yeah. She is acting the shit out of this role, and it's so good.
She is committed to her husband.
Oh, yes.
She is committed to this role.
She is committed to that jacket with the little raccoon tails on it in that scene in the airport. Yes. What on earth?
That may be my favorite costume piece in the movie, is that
as quote. It should be.
Those flippity flopping raccoon tails.
It's so goofy. I love it. Oh my God.
Yeah, her entire track from how happy she is on the phone calling the concierge. Listen, honey, I want the hotel suite. She's just going through the list. And then she hears it. And then she goes to the ticket counter. Just give me the ticket, dickhead.
with the tears running down her face.
And the hair already starting to grow.
Yes. The more unhinged she gets, the bigger the hair gets, the more outrageous the costumes are. Yeah. It's like she looked into her closet and said, what's the most threatening jacket I can put on? This one with the raccoon tails.
Yes.
An animal died to make this jacket. And that's the energy I'm bringing to Miami.
I did want to mention about Alec Baldwin. This is his hot face.
Yes, it is.
See, this does nothing for me. The hair is too dark. It looks like it's going to start running down his face like Rudy Giuliani. I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't like it.
Okay.
But I see where you're coming from.
Yep.
I'm just going to take a shot in the dark here, Michael. I'm assuming it's the black briefs.
Oh yeah. That was a lovely surprise.
That's valid. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I went, oh, look at the briefs.
He's going to be dead in 5 seconds, but those briefs look damn good.
Yeah.
No, you're right about that. That is, it's the head that doesn't do it for me, but from the bottom down, it's a go.
Solid.
Yes. But I always think he's the most attractive in Beetlejuice. He's just so, so cute.
He is. Yes.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
With the glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good.
So the only principal we really haven't hopped on yet is Dean Stockwell as Tony. Where are we sitting on him?
What a comeback for him, apparently.
Yeah.
I've seen him in a few things looking through his filmography. Would never have really known it was him. I've even saw him in Long Day's Journey into Night. Was he one of the sons in that movie?
He's the younger. He's Edmund.
Okay. So I've seen him in that, I guess. But yeah, very good in this. It's tough. I was much more interested in the other three than Tony. I laughed at all the kind of machinations around Tony with, you know, the outfits, the sets, the costumes, but he himself, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think I knew him mainly from Blue Velvet is like the thing I know him from the most. He is a threatening presence in this, but it works. That's what he's supposed to be. He's a big old creep.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I agree, Michael. He is not the one that I am drawn to the most out of all the leads in this, but he does exactly what he is supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing good.
For some reason, the one line he has that always makes me laugh is when they're about to get jumped at Burger World.
Oh, the Burger World song. Oh my God.
And he just gets this look on his face and goes, "That's a new clown." And for some reason, just this deadpan thing he says that somehow clicks that they're in danger because it's a new clown, just it tickles me.
Yeah, because he's been to Burger World so many times, he knows all the clowns.
Yeah.
And so he knows immediately, this is a new clown. We're in danger. We're going to die. I love that scene of them going to Burger World. It's so adorable. And that's, again, it's just more of like turning the whole mob shtick on its head. You would never see that in any other mob movie, of these two mobsters just getting so excited to go to Burger World. You have to sing the Burger World song to get hyped up to go to Burger World.
And don't forget the onion rings.
Forget the onion rings. Go back for the onion rings.
And then that's power back up in a drive-thru.
That's right. Yes.
And then he gets his little Burger World reprise in his fever dream at the tail end of the movie.
Oh my God.
That's another one of those where Mercedes Rule turns around and has that demonic smile on that only she can do. And she doesn't even say anything. And I'm already on the floor just from her turning around and smiling.
Yep. Yes.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. What about the end credits? And all this extra footage. I didn't remember that from the first time I watched it. And maybe I didn't see it the first time, or maybe I just forgot about it. But it's like a whole other movie. It's all this extra footage they just threw in over the credits.
Yeah. I'm like you, Laura. I did not remember it, probably because I didn't watch it the first time, but there was some note on either Wikipedia or IMDb that said there was so much footage left on the floor that Jonathan Demme was basically just like, just tell the story again with stuff we didn't use over the credits.
It's so odd. And I usually don't like watching the movie again at the end of a movie. It conjures up memories of like the last Twilight movie where they're like, let's go over all the things that we've seen before. And we're in case you've forgotten what happened in this movie, we're going to tell you again.
They do that, don't they?
But this was different footage, so I didn't mind it as much. It was scenes you've never seen before. Like, all right, well, this is just extra. This is a bonus.
And it made me super curious. There seemed to be a lot of footage from the top, like in the medieval times and the tacky hotel room.
Yeah,
I was like, this movie's very tight, but I would watch that movie too. That looks like it could be a lot of fun.
I thought we were about to get like a roll call, like the Twilight movie, Laura.
Yeah.
I think maybe one of the first images is of Kathy Lutkin, Karen Lutkin.
Karen.
That's like the first, like when the shots of her in her little princess waitress outfit. And I was
it's
going to be like a roll call. And I don't really mind a roll call. I think that's fun. Weird for this movie, but then nope, we just got, you know, yeah, scenes we didn't.
Yeah.
We didn't get to see Alec Baldwin knock at the door. True.
Yeah. It would be weird for this movie, especially because I forget this every time, but then when I watch a Jonathan Demme movie, he puts everyone in the opening credits. There are so many names at the beginning, which I kind of like. I like that you put this person who has two lines, put them in the opening credits and let them have their moments of, oh, that's me, I'm in the opening credits.
Yeah.
So you kind of don't need a roll call at the end. But no, I also thought as I was watching it, are we going to do this whole like, and now here's Michelle Pfeiffer and here's extra footage. But mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been interesting.
Is there any other notes y'all have about the movie itself before we move on to some awards talk?
Well, I do want to briefly mention a couple of other costumes that really stood out to me. First of all, why are Matthew Modine's suits so big on him? Those pants are three sizes too big. Who bought this for him? Why?
It's like that.
It looks like the big giant suits that David Byrne wears in Talking Heads, who did the music for this movie. So what happened off screen that they were like, I like that suit, David Byrne. Can I wear that in the movie? What happened?
Yeah.
I noticed that most. It's after Matthew Modine is blending in very well with that singing troupe on the street while watching Michelle. And he's walking behind her. And that was the one shot where I specifically remember thinking, why is he wearing a suit that is four times his size?
He's like a child playing dress up. Which is the vibe of his character, is a child pretending to be an FBI agent. So maybe it works, but a weird choice.
Yeah.
Was that the style in the late 80s? Was big suits a thing?
But he didn't have the sleeves rolled up.
You're right.
Like, I wondered if he was going to go full Miami Vice at any point, even once we get to Florida with the big suits, but no.
No, no. Too dark, too, for Miami. It would have to be a whiter,
a cream
or something.
He looks much better in his little cabana shirt and his mustache.
Oh, yes. That fake mustache. Gosh. He looks, I kept thinking he looked a little bit like Bo Burnham at the end. Did anyone else think that?
Yeah, a little bit. I could see it.
Absolutely does.
Just a little. Okay, I also want to talk about the baseball sweater that Michelle wears at some scene. It just has baseballs all over it. Do you remember that? She has such interesting outfits. There's the baseball sweater, and then whatever scene it was, I think Matthew Modine comes to her door, or maybe it's someone else. She opens it. She's wearing a shirt. It has a dinosaur on it, wearing a little spinny hat, and she has a little scarf in her hair, and then a jacket over it. It's so odd. It's so out of left field that, like, did she borrow this from her son? I don't know why. It's a dinosaur on her shirt. It's so funny.
I love that baseball sweater, though. I remember that baseball sweater very well. That's when I move soon, I will wear a baseball sweater.
You have to. It's how you tell everyone that you like baseball.
And then I'm moving to a new place.
Yeah, like a baseball moves from one end of the stadium to the other. And then the only other notable costume. Oh, well, I do have to say this because I wrote this down. I was watching this movie with a friend who, when she put on the chicken restaurant uniform that looks like the marching band, my friend said she looks like both Belle and the Beast combined. Like, she has this little yellow dress and the blue jacket over it, and it looks like she's combined those two outfits together. And she's like a Beauty and the Beast cosplay, which this movie had not come out yet, but that is what she looks like.
That's perfect.
That is funny.
That and the sunglasses she wears on the plane to Miami are incredible.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
I love those. Sunglasses. Those are very, very 80s and very Miami. And that with the leopard print or cheetah print or whatever it was, that is a look.
I feel like we really need to get Colleen Atwood an Oscar nomination for this then. It seems like we really made the case for it.
We did.
Yeah.
This is a great argument for doing costume designs, for doing a costume design for modern day and a costume design for period pieces.
Yeah.
Because they're two totally different things. And I wish that they would do that. Because, oh boy, would this have won?
Yes. I think they do it for like the Costume Guild Awards. They definitely make it specific. Yeah. But yeah, for the Oscars, just like they did with the musical comedy and dramatic scores back in the day.
That's right. Yeah.
I think you could even do it for set design, probably.
Yeah.
Set and costumes, do that too. I think that would be really...
Why not? Speaking of the Oscars...
Yes, the awards.
Awards!
Michelle wasn't nominated for an Oscar for this.
Tell us who was nominated, Jerry.
So this is the year that Glenn Close should have won for Dangerous Liaisons. She didn't.
Jerry, do you have strong opinions about Glenn Close and Dangerous Liaisons?
No.
You know I might. You know I just might.
I've never heard you speak about it ever.
On my tombstone, Glenn Close should have won for Dangerous Liaisons. So we've got Glenn for that. We've got Melanie Griffith for Working Girl. Mm. The winner was Jodie Foster for The Accused. Sigourney being double nominated for Gorillas in the Mist. And then Meryl for The Dingo Eating Her Baby.
Oh, that's, I still have not seen that. Crazy. I need to.
Yeah, it's one of my Meryl blind spots as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, okay, we gotta watch it together. Okay, this is an interesting group.
And a very strong one.
Yes.
It's a very strong lineup.
It's hard to speak on it without having seen A Cry in the Dark, Meryl Streep's performance. But I don't know if I would take any of them out and put Michelle in. I'm not sure. It feels like Melanie Griffith is occupying the comedy spot, but I think she is really great in Working Girl, so I don't know if I would necessarily take her out in place of Michelle.
She is, and that's sort of how I feel about the Oscars, because they don't feel very adventurous this year in terms of non-dramatic work.
Yeah.
And it feels like the adventurous move for them was how much they nominated and awarded Working Girl. That mm-hmm. seemed to sort of occupy the comedy slot, because as much as I love the five supporting actresses, I probably would have tried to get Mercedes Rule in there as well, but you've mm-hmm. got both Sigourney and Joan Cusack for Working Girl.
Yeah.
They're already for a comedy slot, and it sort of feels like Working Girl eclipsed any other comedies this year in terms of it, of mm-hmm. Oscars, at least.
It's the Mike Nichols of it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, I mean, you can't blame him. It's a good movie.
I love Working Girl.
Yeah.
Deservedly so. Working Girl is amazing.
Yeah.
But at least this one kicked off her first of six Golden Globe nominations.
Six. Mm-hmm. Wow. Good for her.
Yeah. Six consecutive Golden Globes. And this was her first one. And it's odd because she had the opportunity to be double nominated this year, but she got nominated for Married at the Mob at the Globes and Liaisons at the Oscars, and zero overlap between the two.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yeah. Who was she up against at the Golden Globes?
So Melanie Griffith won,
obviously, yeah.
for Working mm-hmm. Girl. You had Amy Irving for Crossing Delancey, which is apparently a good underrated movie that I have yet to see.
I have not seen that, yeah.
Susan Sarandon for Bull Durham.
Oh, great.
Solid.
Great movie.
And then Jamie Lee Curtis for A Fish Called Wanda.
Oh, I mean, she would be my winner, I think.
Yeah, it's another mm-hmm. great lineup.
Yeah.
That is a great lineup for that category.
What a good group, yeah.
There's just a lot of good female performances this year.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that were noticed by nominating groups.
Yes. Were any of the men nominated for this?
So Dean Stockwell was nominated everywhere. He was actually the film's only Oscar nomination was for supporting actor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then he won National Society of Film Critics, New York Film Critics, Boston, Kansas City, and was nominated for Chicago.
Wow.
And then okay. Mercedes Rule actually joined him as the supporting actress winner at National Society of Film Critics.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so he was up against for the Oscars. Tell us those. I'm curious now.
I know he was up against Kevin Kline.
Yeah, here we go. So
Kevin Kline won,
of course. He was also up against River Phoenix for Running on Empty, Alec Guinness for Little Dorit? How do you say that?
Doris.
I'm not sure. And Martin Landau for Tucker, the Man and His Dream. I've never seen
a movie we've all seen.
You know, everyone's favorite movie. I watched it the other day.
I've heard most of those movies.
All right. Well, that is a varied group. River Phoenix and Martin Landau in the same category. Those are not two people you would ever think to be in the same place. But all right. Interesting.
Yeah, veterans and newish comers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would have been a young River Phoenix. Yes.
Yeah, it was curious to me that Dean Stockwell was the only one, like the only nomination. No text, no screenplay, nothing. But it really does seem to kick off really goodwill for future work, because you know, you have Michelle getting her first nomination, and then the year after she gets her Baker Boys nomination. And then 3 years later in 91, you have Jonathan Demme there sweeping for Silence of the Lambs, and you have Mercedes Rule picking up her supporting actress Oscar for Fisher King.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes. What a transition to go from Married to the Mob to Silence of the Lambs. Two very similar movies.
Yeah. you're not stretching. You're not.
No, not at all.
Challenging yourself.
And that's something I always like to think about, even though I do think Jodie Foster is the perfect Clarice Starling. I don't think you can get better than that.
Mm-hmm.
But Jonathan Demme wanted Michelle for Clarice.
Yeah.
Oh, it would have been so different.
Yeah. And she said, no, thank you. This is too dark for me. I would not like to do this for my mental health, basically.
Yeah. That's understandable. For one, it is a very dark film. And that would have been, she would have been a much more vulnerable Clarice, where Jodie has that like kind of determined, gritty feel. She seems like she really did grow up in West Virginia on a sheep farm. And yeah.
But yeah, between those two, and as we were talking about so many other Jonathan Demme movies, he's so good at getting these iconic female performances on film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even going further, like Anne Hathaway and Rachel getting married, despite how you feel about the movie, I think Meryl Streep is great in Ricky and the Flash. So.
Oh, yeah. She's wonderful. I mean, yes, he is so skilled at letting women do what they want on screen, mm-hmm. and making them three-dimensional characters and not just archetypes.
He really does lay the groundwork. I mean, even with Rachel getting married, how you were saying, it even launched Rosemary DeWitt.
Oh, yeah.
She's excellent orbit, in that movie.
And he even got Deborah Winger back on screen. So
that's right.
Really does. There's so much goodwill for him in the industry. And especially with women, he just is really, I think he said he just finds them just really fascinating in the best way. And really just lets them play. And wants to figure them out.
Sounds very collaborative for how Michelle put it in that article, is that he was so open to her ideas and not even taking credit for them. He would say to her, I would never have thought of that. You're so smart. Let's do that.
He sounds like very much an actor's director when you hear stuff like that. But then when you see his movies, the way that they're shot and the way that everything is locked and choreographed and staged, it's such masterful work at the same time. Like, he's so skilled at every bit of the directing to make such very detailed choices and also such grand choices. I mean, it's all, his movies are just, they're such complete works.
Even with that, one of my favorite little bits is when Tony is figuring out where he's seen Detective Downey before. He runs through all his disguises that he's noticed this man in.
Yeah. Walking through the doors.
Walking through the lobby doors of the hotel in Miami. And I just thought that was such a singular choice to have this character connect those dots. It just felt like, I don't know of anybody else who would stage it like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it speaks like what you were talking about with his just the craft, let alone the directing, the performances, the craft as well is equally amazing.
Yes.
All right. So I feel like the answer to this is obvious. Would we recommend this movie?
No.
I think you can skip it. It's fine.
A resounding yes, of course.
Yes, across the board.
And how do we feel about Michelle's performance in this? Just sort of mental ranking.
Oh, that's tough. Amongst her other performances, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, okay, that is tough. Hmm.
It might be in the top five for me.
I think I would probably agree. I obviously have not, I've not seen as many Michelle movies as you have, both of you have, but I think the same for me. I said earlier, my favorite performance of hers is Batman Returns and The Age of Innocence. I love her in The Witches of Eastwick. Yeah, I agree. I think this would be in the top five.
I think when I ranked it, I think this is number five for me. It came just after Ellen in Age of Innocence for me.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Well, yes, everyone, that's three for three.
Yeah.
Go watch this movie.
Use guys better watch this movie. I love all the use guys.
So perfect. Don't
forget about it.
She is really great with kids though. I loved that little, when she's saying goodbye to her son in the playground, the be good.
her son does disappear for a while in the movie. I don't know where he is when she goes out on the date. I don't know where he is when she goes to Miami.
Oh yeah, he hasn't been affected at all by this.
No, he's fine.
Is the last we see him when he's at Matthew Modine's door and then never again?
Maybe.
Possibly. I think that might be it.
He's fine. Fine.
Oh, well.
In a brand new city, by himself, doesn't know where the subway works. He'll be okay.
Yeah. He'll be in the bathtub when they get home. It's going
to
be fine.
Bathtub in the kitchen. Yes.
Running through the barbed wire fence to get to school, probably hurting himself.
Yeah, he's got a staph infection now from those scratching him. Just tending to himself in the bathtub in the kitchen.
I'm like, where's my mommy? Like,
this is the most morbid sequel I've ever heard to this comedy.
Son of the mob.
The mob stranded in New York City.
So I believe that brings us to 6 degrees of Michelle Pfeiffer.
Woohoo!
Michael, I think you did the rules. You did do the rules last time. So for those of you joining us for the first time, we end each episode with a little game we call 6 degrees of Michelle Pfeiffer, which is where we connect, well, where we give each other one actor or actress, and we have to connect them to Michelle Pfeiffer in 6 degrees or less via other actors and actresses. But since we have a guest, we give Laura the choice. She can either play 6 degrees with us and we'll give round robin style, or she can try to stump us and give us our options. So, Laura, which choice would you like to make?
I'm going to give you guys both challenges. Awesome. So I have chosen two, but I have an alternate one in case, because I feel like one of mine is a little bit difficult. So I have an alternate just in case we need it. But I know that all of these people do connect to Michelle. So I will start with Michael.
Okay.
I'm going to give you Laura Linney.
Ooh, okay. Okay, so I'm thinking about like, I'm going through like The Savages. You Can Count on Me. Let's see. Okay, here's one that came to me. So let's see, Michelle was in Cherie, Personal Effects with Kathy Bates, who was in Titanic with Kate Winslet. Did it just go out of my head, my next step? Oh gosh. Oh no, who was in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with Jim Carrey, who was in The Truman Show with Laura Linney.
Very good. Very good. Ooh, that was a different way than I had it, because I worked it out myself. Like, what would I do?
Yeah.
So I had done it. Michelle was in Scarface with Al Pacino. Mm-hmm. Al Pacino was in The Irishman with Anna Paquin. Anna Paquin was in Squid and the Whale with Laura Linney.
Nice. Oh, okay.
I worked it out differently. Yes.
Very nice.
Okay. Jerry, so this is the one I feel might be a little bit difficult. So I will give you an alternative if you can't get there, but I believe that you will get there. So your actor is Jimmy Stewart.
You want the moon, Mary?
Okay. I think I can get there in six with this. So Michelle is in Frankie and Johnny with Al Pacino.
Okay.
Who is in Glengarry Glen Ross with Jack Lemmon, who is in Days of Wine and Roses with Lee Remick, who is in Anatomy of a Murder with Jimmy Stewart.
Very good. I also got there with Jack Lemmon. There was, you could have done one step easier because Jack Lemmon and Jimmy Stewart were in Bell, Book, and Candle together.
I always forget.
So you were close. Yes. Yes. But very good. Yes. You also could have, you also just could have done Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross, who's in this. There we go. Yeah.
So very many Glengarry Glen Ross.
All those men. Yeah. That's a really good one to connect with lots of people. It's just so many men.
I'll remember that for next time. If I'm really struggling, go to Glengarry Glen Ross.
It's a good one to start with.
We need men. Just head that direction.
Yes. Do you want to know my alternate one? Because boy, is it a strange one.
Yes, please.
Okay. I'll give it to you both because I think you'll get there pretty quickly. But the alternate is John Cena.
Shit. Why am I only thinking of Trainwreck for John Cena?
Well,
he is in that. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I've got it.
Got it?
I've got one for me.
All right.
Oh, yeah, I could, yep.
All right, let's hear it.
Are you going the mother route with Kristen Wiig as well?
Ooh.
No, I'm not.
Okay, so
all right, you go, Jerry, and then Michael go.
Michelle is in Mother with Kristen Wiig, who is in Skeleton Twins with Bill Hader, who is in Trainwreck with John Cena.
Very good, okay.
So then mine was
go ahead.
Michelle is in One Fine Day with George Clooney, who's in Michael Clayton with Tilda Swinton, who is in Trainwreck with John Cena.
Nice.
You both got Trainwreck. Very good. I had done it. I went like the uber popular movie route. John Cena was just in F9 with Vin Diesel, who is in Endgame with Paul Rudd. Now, technically, Michelle Pfeiffer is credited as being in Endgame as well, but I'm like, was she?
Well, so, she's in Ant-Man and the Wasp movies with Paul
Rudd.
Yes,
so there you go. She was in Ant-Man and the Wasp with Paul Rudd. Ah, very good, friends.
Oh, those were great options.
You're welcome.
So, Laura, where can our listeners follow you on the social medias? How can they keep up with everything you do?
So I am on Twitter and Letterboxd at my name, Laura Saladino. My username on both of those is L.E. Saladino. You can find me both of those places are probably where I'm most active, most especially on Letterboxd. Gotta log all these Michelle Pfeiffer movies.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We loved having you on for this one.
Thank you. It has been a blast. Thank you for having me.
And Pfeiffer fans, that means this has been another episode of Pfeiffer Fridays. I'm Jerry Downey, and you can follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd at JerryDowney913.
And you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Michael D. McLean.
You can find updates about the podcast by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Pfeiffer Fridays. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts or whatever your preferred podcast channel is. It makes us easier to find so we can continue to spread the Michelle gospel to one and all. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you again next week for Pfeiffer Fridays.
This is whole life.
Your life is so bad. You have a beautiful house. You have plenty of money. You have a great kid. You have a husband who loves you. What more do you want from me?
I want a normal life. I am sick and tired of the gambling, the guns, bailing you out of jail, never knowing when you're going to come home, if you're going to come home. Look at this place. Everything we wear, everything we eat, everything we own fell off a truck.
Shh, take it easy, baby. I don't think you're making much sense.